Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Max Fawcett, lead columnist at the National Observer. Hello.
Hello, Jesse Brown.
Today on the show, Max, the path of banality, reasons to be mad at the solar eclipse, and the carbon tax. It's been 5 years. Do I have to figure out what it is? Welcome to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
The eclipse of the century.
This is an experience beyond all experiences. You can't prepare yourself.
Well, Niagara Falls, Ontario has declared a state of emergency, with more than a million people expected to visit this coming Monday.
In this vast tank, Merlot ready to be served on the big day, but he's worried his small winery will be overrun.
It's like you're having a sunburn, only it's happening on the retina.
I'm going to use the word panic. I have no other word for it. The amount of panic that you're seeing in around school boards.
And the education minister, Stephen Lecce, is also coming out strong, calling the day off an outrage.
Two Montreal scientists are denouncing the way the Quebec government is dealing with the upcoming solar eclipse, saying that their approach is fueling hysteria.
The breathless coverage continues on, Max. CTV News Kitchener, crossing guards concerned about solar eclipse. National Post, New York inmates sue to watch eclipse after state orders prisons lock down. CBC, no, birds won't fall out of the sky on April 8th. CTV Vancouver, solar eclipse, traffic fatality surge possible. Researchers warn. Radio Canada, how to photograph the eclipse without frying your phone. CNN, these household items can protect your eyes during a solar eclipse. USA Today, April solar eclipse isn't a great place for pets, experts say. This has overtaken the media. Everybody is trying to find various angles on this. I've gone deep. I have immersed myself in eclipse coverage, but I've gone beyond that, Max. I have gone into the science of the eclipse. I've gone into the mathematics of the eclipse. I have gone into the spirituality of the solar eclipse. And what I can tell our listeners today is that it's going to get dark for like about a minute. Depending on where you are on Monday, it'll get dark. Don't look up. That's it. That's all you need to know. That is all of this can be condensed. It's going to get dark for a minute or two. Don't look up.
It's so cynical, Jesse. It's a natural phenomenon. I mean, the path of totality sounds like the next James Bond movie. It sounds so exciting. It's funny, like you're getting saturated with coverage out there because, you know, obviously in Ontario, you're in the path of totality. Here in Alberta, we've barely heard a word about this because we're left out from all the fun you guys are having. So I get that the media maybe is taking this maybe a step or five too far in terms of trying to generate content out of this and trying to find their own little angle into it. I'm surprised we haven't gotten coverage here in Alberta about how it's going to impact the oil and gas industry. But I think we should take a step back and appreciate that it's like this really cool moment that everyone gets to share and talk about.
Except for you in Alberta.
Except for us in Alberta. Well, exactly. We're so jealous of it.
I went pretty deep, but remind our listeners why. What, no eclipse in Alberta?
No. I mean, we'll get an eclipse, but it's not the totality of the eclipse. You know, we're not even going to get the 95% eclipse. We're just going to get some half-assed junior eclipse or whatever it might be. So
that's Trudeau for you.
Canada is clearly broken if Alberta's not getting a total eclipse. But I feel like we get so few opportunities to get excited about things together that aren't political, that aren't sports, whatever it might be, that we get to get excited about science. And we should all be kind of leaning into that as much as we possibly can, notwithstanding the frustrating oversaturation in the media and school boards freaking out the way school boards do.
I'm with you. I think we should lean into the excuse to half-ass it. You know, we can fill our broadcasts and our pages with completely pointless coverage. And the school's just like, doesn't it just feel like every institution is just like the flimsy excuse just to like not show up? Just like, well, f*** it. F*** We cannot be held responsible for making children look down for 2 minutes. Your kid is staying home with you. That's what's happening. No school. I get it. It's a reminder of just how small we are in the universe. It's something that happens very rarely. It forces you to think about, like, balls, you know, obstructing other balls, which we should be forced to think about.
I feel like we can always have more ball discourse. I mean, it's baseball season. You know, I don't know. When the education minister calls the way the schools are behaving an outrage, I think that's what he said. Like, we're really lowering the bar on outrage here. The fact that schools are giving kids a day off to, I don't know, maybe go look at an angle at the sun. Like, that's, I think, more important than anything they're probably going to learn on that particular day. They'll certainly remember it. I mean, I remember, gosh, I think we had, it must have been a partial eclipse back in the mid-80s, and it was a big to-do, and we all got our little cardboard things that we made to look at the sun so we didn't hurt our eyes and, you know, didn't pull a Donald Trump, and it was cool. I think anything that gets people more excited about science and less excited about politics is probably a good thing in this day and age. So I fully support it, and I am fully jealous that, you know, we don't get to see it out here in the West this time. I mean, I was talking to your producer before the show, and he was saying, you know, it's not like Central Canada gets the same number of natural wonders as Western Canada. So, you know, maybe it's evening up the score a little bit. But then I pointed out that I'm in the prairies, and we don't really get many natural wonders out here. So there you go.
Let those Western bastards bask in the sun. So our producer, James, was curious about whether the hysteria, the eclipse fever, is something new. And he's dug up a clip from 1979. Max, you and I have not seen this before.
Thousands of people who have traveled to southern Manitoba for tomorrow's eclipse of the sun may get only a dim view of the phenomenon. Terry Matty reports.
There's some excellent ties in that clip.
Excellent bell bottoms.
Great mustaches, great side parts.
The celestial show has drawn thousands of visitors from Europe and the United States. And in Red Lake, Ontario, scientists have begun launching a series of rockets to do tests in the Earth's atmosphere. Ironically, many Manitobans will not see the eclipse. Some school boards, taking the advice of eye doctors, will keep children in their classrooms to watch the show on television. Teacher groups have complained about this because most scientists and academics say there are safe ways to watch the eclipse directly, and they say a television picture of a total solar eclipse is a poor substitute for the real thing.
But school administrators say they must follow the advice of the eye doctors, and besides, the schools cannot provide proper supervision for the students.
You're wearing glasses? Be sure.
Not all school divisions agree. In Neepawa, Manitoba, school children will watch the eclipse using special visors developed by the Manitoba Planetarium. Parents will help supervise.
This explains so much about why Manitobans age like 50 to 60 are all blind. I always wondered why they're all stumbling about. No, it was cloudy. Oh, isn't that the kicker? And it might be cloudy on Monday.
In Minnedosa, paper bag visors incorporate number 12 or number 14 welder's glass, approved as safe by the National Research Council. The children will wear the bags to watch the partial phases of the eclipse, then go into the shade and remove the bags to experience the onset of darkness. During the brief total part of the eclipse, they can look directly towards the sun with no eye protection.
In Winnipeg, many parents plan to keep their children home from school tomorrow so they can see the eclipse. In fact, some high schools expect an absentee rate as high as 90%. But the show may not be all that spectacular after all. The weather office is predicting heavy cloud cover for much of southern Manitoba tomorrow morning. Terry Matty, CBC News, Winnipeg.
But they had such wonderful paper bags that they decorated. I mean, I think everyone should get the chance to make their own decorative bags. That's wonderful.
Half of them are wearing like decorative bags or boxes, and the others had the same flimsy like movie 3D glasses that we're giving our kids this time around, which feels like not up to the, after we've scared the wits out of everyone, like this is going to burn the retinas out of your face. Here's a pair of 3D glasses made with like Kleenex box that is going to save you from that. Now stare directly at the sun.
I was impressed by the tyranny of the eye doctors back in the 70s, the way they talked about it. Like, well, we have all these experts who think the kids should enjoy it, but the eye doctors say no, so we're not going to do it. Like, it's very impressive.
I'll tell you one thing we didn't hear there was any talk of schools just shutting down. Like the kids were staying home, or there was some controversy over the kids being forced to stay in class and watch it on TV. But there was no, like, we're just shutting down the schools.
It seems like there was just a bit of a, I don't know, fewer give back then. I just feel like teachers and society in general was just a little more laid back in the 70s. I couldn't tell you why that might be, but, you know, like, I mean, if you don't want to come to school on that day, don't come to school. We're not going to close the school, but we're not going to put it on the parents and be like, sorry, you now have to arrange childcare for your kids because we've decided to, you know, listen to our liability lawyer who wants us to not get sued for blinding children. It was a simpler, sweeter time.
I think we've covered every possible angle of the coming solar eclipse. Enjoy your 2 minutes in darkness, Canadians. Max, it is your first time on our program. We don't like it when people miss important news stories, so we duly note them. Max, have you brought something to duly note?
I have. It's a column by the National Post's Tristan Hopper that I've seen variations of it circulating over the last week. He wrote about this secret RCMP report that was brought to light through an access to information request by a Thompson Rivers University prof that supposedly said that Canadians may revolt once they realize how broke they are and that, quote, Canada may descend into civil unrest once citizens realize the hopelessness of their economic situation. That was in quotes. The report says no such thing, Jesse. I looked at it. I did the, you know, control F for all the words that Mr. Hopper used, and there is nothing like that in the report. What there is a report that takes stock of the challenges facing the country, including climate change, which it mentions repeatedly, the income and wealth gap between generations, the possibility of a recession, the threat of paranoid populism and disinformation. It did not say that young Canadians are going to revolt because of cost of living issues, but that is how it has been reported within the sort of further reaches of the right-wing press. You know, RT, Russia Today picked up on it and carried that framing. And even Pierre Poilievre in the House of Commons basically suggested that the framing that Mr. Hopper used was an accurate characterization of the report. This is problematic to me on a bunch of levels. I don't think we should be making things up and then putting it into the public domain and allowing it to spread. Maybe it gets a lot of page views, but that is not good journalism. I also think it does disservice to the issue that Hopper and maybe Poilievre are trying to talk about, which is just the absolute shit show that young Canadians are facing right now. And that is a fact. The Gallup polling agency does these worldwide happiness rankings, and older Canadians are some of the happiest people in the world. I think older Canadians rank 8th in the world. Under 30 rank 58th. There is a huge and widening gap between how young and older Canadians experience things, and we need to talk about that. But that's not how the conversation unfolded. And it wasn't just Hopper. It was, you know, Terry Glavin basically repeated that framing. Joe Warmington took it one step further and basically suggested that young Canadians were going to have a revolution over being not well off. And it's sort of textbook rage farming. There is this sort of ecosystem where Post Media gins something up and then Pierre Poilievre shares it on his socials, and it just sort of feeds itself. And maybe that works for them. I don't think it's working for Canadians.
Yeah, I can't speak for any of those people that you're citing there or criticizing. My guess would be, like, very few people are like, I'm going to gin this up and exaggerate it for clicks. Like, it's not a conscious thing that a lot of people think. I am familiar with, like, a pretty widely held concern, belief that, like, we are headed to hell in a handbasket, productivity in Canada, like all the economic factors, we're going to lose, we're the next Argentina, and you can't overstate that. You know, we need to have a conversation about that, and they're saying, it's going to be a revolution.
Yeah, but words have meaning, Jesse. I mean, if you say that Canadians are going to revolt, and you're citing a primary source document that doesn't say anything like that, I think that's bad faith.
I'm sure there's some sort of weird, like, domino of, like, there's something in the document that has, like, some heightened language, and then that leads to unrest, and then unrest leads to revolt. And as it goes through these different, like, you know, exaggerating echo chambers, it gets louder and louder and more detached from the original research.
There's no mention of unrest. So the closest it gets, and this is in the sort of unredacted portion that everyone has access to, I don't think that the National Post has access to the redacted portions, but it says the situation will probably deteriorate further in the next 5 years as the early effects of climate change and a global recession add their weight to the ongoing crises. The ongoing crises that they're talking about is not Trudeau's debt. It's not cost of living. It's Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the spread of disinformation, and climate change. Those things are barely mentioned in Post Media's coverage here. It's, the climate change part wasn't mentioned at all.
Right. Like, there's a bait and switch aspect to what people are getting so upset about.
And what the risks are to Canadians. I mean, yeah, let's have a conversation based on this RCMP report about the risks that we face. But the risk is not young people revolting because things are expensive. it is these cascading crises that are being fed by misinformation, populism, Russia. It's a much bigger picture sort of analysis, and I just don't think they did their readers any favors there.
Duly noted. You read Alex Jones's written works, yes?
Right, of course.
Well, listen, book selling is a gentlemanly trade. It's a dignified and important job. A lot of people out there are in the book selling business. I learned this just this week through a piece in CBC News. For sale by Canada, books by notorious conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. Government of Canada has somehow come into possession of a lot of 47 copies of The Great Reset and The War for the World by alt-right radio host Alex Jones. The bidding is open. You can buy this, Max. The book is like, you know, I don't know, it's like $40 or something on Amazon, $36. Anyhow, this is a deal. The government of Canada will sell you 47 copies of this. I think the bidding is like somewhere below $300 plus a shipping charge. I did the math. I worked it out. There's, if you could resell this at Amazon's rate, you could make a nice little sum here. You could make $1,000 or so. Why does the government have 47 copies of Alex Jones? Why does Public Service and Procurement Canada have this asset?
I mean, it's a very good question. I wonder whose bunker they raided to get these. They must have maybe gotten these in some sort of criminal proceeding or seizure, and maybe there was a case of Alex Jones books next to, you know, a bunch of rations and artillery and whatnot. But, you know, I was trying to sort of put myself in the shoes of the public servant who made this decision, you know, to try to profit from the sale of these books, which are just obviously the product of a diseased and broken mind. And I suspect that they really, really wanted to avoid headlines around the Canadian government censoring Alex Jones by pulping his books or throwing them in the landfill. And I just feel like this was someone who was desperately trying to avoid becoming the main character of the day on right-wing Twitter in America, and they probably succeeded.
I could see that. That's the thing. It's like, well, if I destroy these, that has, if that's ever learned, that'll have a political impact. If I just shelve them, then, you know, so the thing to do is to sell them. I don't know. I just want to know. I think you're correct here. It's not clear how the books came to be in the government's possession, reports the CBC. But the PSPC suggested that they may have been seized by authorities. Assets like these typically have been forfeited to the Crown as a result of regulatory or criminal enforcement action, either at border control points or within Canada. All right, well, Canada Land gets results. If anyone has any information on how the government came into possession of 47 copies of Alex Jones's book, please get in touch with Canada Land. In the meantime, I'm looking at the shipping rates, and we can have these to our office for $94.63 expedited parcel from Canada Post.
Duly noted.
Starting today, Canadians will pay more to gas their cars and heat their homes.
They're pouring more fuel on the inflationary flames with a April Fool's Day carbon tax.
So is the carbon tax even working? The answer is complex.
The term rebate is a bit misleading because you get the money up front before paying the carbon tax.
What's going on, Max? I don't understand.
It's a little confusing, and that, I think, has become abundantly obvious by now that the confusion is the Achilles heel of this policy. It makes perfect sense to economists, and not surprising because it was economists who pushed for carbon pricing as the way to fight climate change. And, you know, I think if you gathered a room full of undergraduate econ students, you would get pretty widespread agreement that this is the right way to go. The problem is the Canadian public is not a undergrad seminar of econ students, and the government has, until basically the last, call it 6 months, kind of refused to explain any of this. They've sort of assumed that the carbon tax and rebate would speak for itself. They assumed, I think, that the 2021 election kind of closed the book on the climate issue, and they have been caught completely off guard by the just the furiousness with which Pierre Poilievre has attacked it, has linked it to, you know, everything, including your arthritic hip, and people are buying it because I think prior to COVID, prior to the inflation that produced, you know, the cost of living was not top of mind for all Canadians. It was certainly top of mind for a lot of Canadians, but they were more zeroed in on things like housing, big ticket issues like that. And now that we are all sort of going to the grocery store and kind of quietly sobbing to ourselves every time we get the bill, we need something to blame. We need something to point our finger to and say, oh, that's what's causing it. And Pierre Poilievre served up the carbon tax on a platter. And, you know, all these like well-meaning interventions by economists and journalists trying to explain things to people, like, it's one of the oldest political rules in the book, which is if you're explaining, you're losing. And the Liberals are losing by almost 20 points in the polls, in large part because they're still explaining this stuff.
But can someone explain it to me? This isn't new. This is an old policy. They ran on this again and again. Look, my ignorance is selective and tactical. Everybody has to decide what they're going to actually go deep on. It's probably not drastic enough, whatever the hell it is. And that's been my attitude towards this. But now it's blown up. Poilievre is hammering on about it's an April Fool's Day joke. And I did notice that gas has already been climbing. And now I'm like, oh, it's going to go. There's a tax now? That doesn't seem like good timing. And the media is just filled with, like, pain at the pump, pain at the pump, pain at the pump. So all of a sudden this is bad? Max, help?
Happy to. I mean, I feel like this is the role I've unintentionally signed up for. The questions I hear most often are twofold. There's one, why should I get a rebate? Doesn't that undermine the whole point of a carbon tax? And two, is it doing anything? What's the point? So, you know, on the first one, the reason why you get a rebate is...
Hold on, I get a rebate?
You get a rebate, Jesse. You live in Ontario. Believe it or not, everyone who lives in Ontario, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and the Maritimes gets a rebate every quarter.
So they're taxing me and then they're giving it back to me?
They're actually giving it back to you before they tax you. They're giving you the rebate before you pay that year's carbon taxes.
This is not getting any clearer.
I know. And here's the kicker. Up until recently, and even still, they're struggling with this. They haven't had the banks identifying the payments consistently. So one person might look in their TD checking account and see EFT Canada, $237.50, and go, huh, I don't know what that is. Another person might look in their RBC account and it would say GovCan payment, $237.50. There's no consistency. It does not say in everyone's bank account, carbon tax rebate. And so they just recently rebranded it as the Canada Carbon Rebate, the CCR. What a great little acronym. But there's just been this inattention to the sort of basic brass tacks elements of politics, which is if you're going to give people money, make sure they know what they're getting it for.
But why are they giving us money? I thought, what is it? What is it, Max? What is it? Why is it?
So the reason they're giving you money is to protect people who can't make changes in their lifestyle to reduce their emissions. So not everyone can or wants to buy a new car. Not everyone can or wants to replace their windows. Not everyone can or wants to take the bus or take the subway. If there was no rebate, it would just be people paying a carbon tax and being out of pocket. All the carbon tax in a given province that's raised gets returned to that province. There's no transfer from Alberta to Quebec, as Alberta's premier was suggesting on Twitter the other day. All the money stays in the province where it's collected, and everyone gets the same amount. But not everyone burns the same amount of carbon. You know, the person who lives in a one-bedroom condo, takes the TTC, and doesn't go on six vacations a year obviously has a smaller carbon footprint than someone living in a seven-bedroom house in Woodbridge with four cars. The person with more cars, bigger house to heat, they're going to pay more in carbon taxes than they get in the rebate. That is by design. And by extension, the person who takes transit, doesn't go on big vacations, they will end up with more money back than they pay in carbon taxes. So it's a good policy if you get into the weeds on it. The problem is getting into the weeds is terrible politics. And you see that in, you know, in the polling data where Abacus asked people earlier this year, you know, do you know if you're getting money from the government for the carbon tax? And 50% of people in Ontario who have been getting money since 2019 did not know they were getting money. That is a big problem.
Well, it's called a carbon tax. So the idea that you're getting money seems counterintuitive. It's not a tax. It's the government like paying you to get greener. And I do know a little bit about it. All of the economists signed a letter saying this works. This actually, because like, the overall picture of getting emissions down, most of it is industrial, but like a third of it is going to have to come from the population buying into this stuff. How do you get the population to buy into it? It's not by guilting people with Earth Day specials. It's through, like, economists will say you have to give people economic incentives. And this is an economic incentive that actually works. But the problem may have begun when Trudeau and not Poilievre politicized this by letting the eastern provinces off the hook when it comes to a lot of their homes are heated by oil, heating oil, which is like very expensive, but also very, very bad in terms of emissions. But also, you know, people are hard done by there and they also vote liberal. So he gave them a break and said, okay, well, we're not going to do it to that. And once that happened, then the West says, well, what the f-? If they can get off, how about why not us? And then basically we have a revolt of all the premiers opting out of this. And then, yes, Polyev seizes upon this as just more evidence that Canada is broken. It's just a tax. It's called a tax. So let's bash it as a tax. And without really saying, like, if he's prime minister, like he'll have to have some kind of thing to say when it comes to the question of emissions and climate change. So he'll get rid of this and hasn't said what he'll replace it with.
Yeah, there's two things there. I mean, number one, I think we're all kind of begging the question there a little bit on him needing to have a climate policy. I'm not convinced that he does, and I'm not convinced that he will. You know, I think he will talk about adaptation. I think he will talk about living with climate change. He might even talk about, you know, how carbon dioxide makes plants grow faster, which is, by the way, I mean, it's true, but it is totally overwhelmed by the negative impacts on agriculture of climate change, but he won't mention that. So he will pivot to that. We're going to live with it. We're going to make the best of it. I think we need to challenge the idea that he's just going to come up with a policy.
All I'm saying is that he'll say something. He won't stand there and drool. He'll, like, words will come out of his mouth.
He might find a little fig leaf to cover himself up with, but I don't think it's going to be very big. But you're 100% right. Polyev has been misrepresenting the carbon tax since he got elected as leader, but the Liberals blew it up. And this is what pissed off so many advocates of the carbon tax that I know. We've been in the Twitter trenches, like, volunteering to, like, correct misinformation. And we were furious about that decision about the heating oil exemption because it was the government shooting its own legs out from underneath it on this stuff. Now suddenly it has no moral legitimacy to say this applies to everyone, it's fair, it's even. Instead, it looks like they're picking favorites because they are picking favorites. They're picking favorites in the part of the country where they cannot afford to lose seats and where they traditionally have done very well. And there was a lot of protesting that, oh, no, it's not about Atlantic Canada. There's actually more people in Ontario that use heating oil. Odd that there was no Ontario MPs behind the Prime Minister when he made the announcement, because obviously his team knows that it really was about Atlantic Canada and those Liberal MPs there. So that's the frustrating part, is that, you know, if and when this is all undone and if and when, you know, Polyev replaces it with a ridiculous fig leaf, it will be in large part because the Liberals did it to themselves. The best of intentions and some of the worst execution I've ever seen in my life in terms of politics.
Max, that's Shortcuts this week. Thank you for joining me. I can be emailed about it at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. Max Fawcett, where can people find you?
They can find me at Canada's National Observer, where I write three columns a week, and they can still find me over on Twitter, at Max Fawcett.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our production coordinator is Andre Proulx. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Theme music is by So-Called Syndications by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. For farm workers, toiling outside in the summer heat can be dangerous. Extreme heat can lead to headaches, dizziness, and even death. And as the climate warms, the risks will grow.
We all know that record-breaking temperatures are now becoming much more common.
Judge Laura Safer Espinoza helps run the Fair Food Program, a partnership between workers, growers, and more than a dozen large food buyers. The program protects thousands of workers on participating farms from workplace hazards while defending their wages and rights. A few years ago, it added protections against heat stress. From April to November, farm workers now have to take breaks every 2 hours. Espinoza says the mandate prevents people from feeling pressure to keep working even when they need to cool down.
This requires everyone across the field to stop and to rest, to hydrate.
Supervisors also have to watch for any workers who show signs of heat illness and provide them with immediate relief. As the risk of extreme heat grows, these heat stress protections will help keep the workers who are covered by the Fair Food Program safe. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.